So I would like to introduce our guest today, and then we'll begin our interview. We're pleased to have Jenny Jo, a member of the Navajo Nation. Jenny is a professor in the Department of Family and Community Medicine in the College of Medicine at the University of Arizona, and is also a faculty member in American Indian Studies. She is the director of the Native American Research and Training Center and is deeply engaged in intercultural activities. So welcome, Jenny, and thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
And Jim, would you like to begin?
Welcome again, Jenny, and thanks an awful lot for joining us. As you've gathered, we've been talking about the world's great religious and spiritual traditions, focusing on one each week. And so today we want to focus on Native American spirituality, and it's often been pointed out to me by Indian friends that Native American traditions are really not religions as such, so much as they are profound spiritual paths. What's your take on that? Is that a good way to talk about it?
I think so. I think that to talk about organized religion is sort of defines what that is real distinctly. But I think when we talk about spirituality in Native cultures and various Native groups, it's got a very internal and external kind of question about what all that means. And so it's really a sense of spirituality. And that's, I think, the most appropriate way to describe it instead of a specific religion. And so I think that's why most Native people feel very comfortable talking about spirituality, because it's a lot more holistic, don't really have any barriers or any kind of parameters, because they feel like that their spirituality should be as holistic as possible, both internally as well as externally.
I know that, and we're going to speak a little bit later about the interreligious, intercultural, interfaith dimension of all of this, and I know you've been very much involved in all of that, but you've also dealt with representatives of other indigenous traditions, not Native American, but indigenous from around the world. And is it your sense that these traditions have perhaps more in common than separates them?
I think at the very bottom line, there is a lot more commonality. I think there's a strong sense of place. There's a strong sense of some sort of great spirit or spiritual being that is a major part of whatever that belief system or value system may be. So I think that part of it is true. I think what's different in some cases is the way people go about celebrating that or reaffirming those connections. And the other part is that so many communities now have been forced into a variety of different culture change that has really made that probably a lot more difficult to define in some respects. So much so that some of the groups pretty much lost all, you know, whatever they had in what was might have been traditionally a spiritual context that was part of their, you know, ancestral or life as it was in the past.
Well, we want to talk about our theme for today. We've had, as we've discussed each one of these spiritual traditions, we've had a particular theme. When we talked about Judaism, for example, it was justice and so on. And when we're talking about Native American or Indian spirituality, it's the idea of nature. And that seems also related to what you've just alluded to, the connection to the sacred place. Can you say a word or two about nature and why that's so important, I think, in general in indigenous traditions, but especially in Native America? And then maybe we can talk a little bit about what happens when you get cut off from your sacred places.
Well, I think sacred places have different meaning for different groups. Sacred places in some cases really identifies maybe the emergent story of how the people came to be where they are. Sacred places could be all the other kinds of things, such as maybe some very important event took place, and or where deities that are an important part of the spiritual practice are considered to have their spiritual home. And so I think that sacred places and connection to nature is very important, because I think for the most part, Native people are view themselves as looking at the world not only from the sense of the physical and the mental, but also certainly through the spiritual part of everyday life. So it sort of cuts across all these, not only as people live daily life and what they do with their values, but where they live and how they respect that place and take care of it. I think it's very important. It's not usually everybody who does these things on a daily basis. Sometimes those kinds of responsibilities are left to the spiritual leaders in the community, because they are considered having that responsibility as well as the knowledge to, you know, be representative of the community or the people in these various areas.
I'm just curious, if you were introducing us to Navajo spirituality and to some of the sacred places in the context of the reservation lands and so on, what might you be telling us about?
Well, I think the first thing is that it's strongly tied to identity, and identity then means the Navajo people believe that they were actually emerged into this area, and in the area is marked by four sacred mountains. And all these major rivers and other places all have names and some significance. But the four sacred mountains are the boundaries, and it's like saying, this is the land given to you to take care of, and this is where you will prosper. And so the ceremonial activities and the spiritual prayers that are said every day acknowledge these mountains as being home of the spiritual deities that are there not only to be of help, but also to protect the people who are there. So it's a very important place. It's very much like, I think, in a cathedral of sorts, where people feel it's a landmark. And for Navajo people, it's that four sacred mountains.
Absolutely. It, you know, what occurs to me as you speak is that more than any other tradition that we've been hearing about so far, the notion of how important is balance comes into the picture, that a balance between the protection of the people by the deity, but also the responsibility of the people to protect the land, that basically all of nature in that sacred space becomes a cathedral as opposed to a certain building or a mosque or a church or something like that. And that balance within the individual, within the environment, between the divine and the person, that this theme seems to be very rich within Native spirituality. Is that something that you could speak a little bit more about?
I think we can also take it down to another level. A hogan, which is a very humble dwelling that you see on the reservation, is actually serves as a sacred dwelling where ceremonial activities take place, where the deities are welcome to help somebody in need. And so the foundation of the hogan, as the main frame is put up, is dedicated to represent the four sacred mountains. That this is a way to, again, bring that may be a distance, a few miles away, right into your home. And that's part of making it real and also celebrating that connection at a very, you know, dwelling level of the people. So I think that this is something that you see not only in the way children are taught, but each part of those areas are very symbolic. Each mountain represents maybe different colors, the color of race, for instance. It also includes the various colors of healing that are important part of a lot of the healing ceremonies that take place. So that kind of connection is sort of interwoven at various levels of living. It's customary for a person to get up in the morning and say their prayers and mentally travel to the tips of these four sacred mountains through these prayers, and in a way saying, I've traveled there to get strength and confidence to make my day meaningful. Mm-hmm. And you end the day almost pretty much saying the same thing. So it centers someone for the day, and it sort of is a kind of a balancing closure at the end of the day.
Very, very rich.
I'm reminded of the prayer, which I think becomes familiar to people that have been involved in interfaith gatherings, which natives have been participating. But the whole concept of walking in beauty seems to be a very central one in the Navajo context.
Well, it's the benediction line of most prayers that acknowledge there is beauty before you, beauty behind you, beauty below you, and beauty above you. And that's sort of the pathway that you're talking about sort of symbolizes.
I think you remember the late Thomas Berry, who was a great ecologist and crusader for the sacred earth. And he used to say, he died last summer, but he used to say that the thing that was most urgent for the peoples of the earth was to recover and reclaim what he thought was the richest sense of sacred nature of any of the cultures, and he thought that was Native America.
I think the
implications of this for the ecological sensibility that we all need to develop.
I think the exposure and the sort of the very rapid, almost forced type of acculturation that happened with the, you know, placing people on reservation and then assigning reservation to organized religion to convert the pagans kind of idea really fractured some of that sacredness that people had in relationship to the land. And the efforts to move people from their ancestral homelands into foreign spaces where, you know, they were not that all familiar. In Navajo, the whole idea of your relationship with the Great Spirit is really also to acknowledge that your umbilical cord is buried on a certain piece of land, and from that land you're introduced with a sacred name that when you converse with the Great Spirit, you identify yourself and say, this is who I am. You know, I am talking to you, so that it's sort of understood that there is the space where you're recognized and it's part of your identity.
That's a lot to take from a people without any understanding of the culture whatsoever, but, you know, we've been through that story before.
I know in the context of the Parliament of the World's Religions, and you've been involved there, Jenny, one of the things that I've heard most often from indigenous peoples as one of their central concerns and most significant complaints is the fact that they have so often been cut off from their sacred places and cut off from their identity or their connection to real physical parts of the earth that were sacred to them.
I think that's true, and I, as I mentioned, some of it is really done by displacement of people. Others is really other kinds of more gradual removal of people. I think that if you're in a poverty state, younger generation are looking for an opportunity to find jobs or other kinds of ways to support their family. So they abandon or leave their area of residence. And so they kind of disconnect themselves with that particular homeland that was maybe part of their early childhood. So I think that's common across with many indigenous groups, is the necessity of life leads you to leave. And I think, if you talk to farmers, they have such a strong relationship to the land and know a lot about weather and, you know, rain seasons and the possibility of what will grow and all those kinds of things. And that was the way a lot of Native people were, although not ever all of them were agriculturalists, but they were able to have a real close relationship with the land and could read and tell you what's going to happen just by observing insects or just observing whatever is growing right in that area, what changes might be happening. But you don't have that if you live in an urban area. You don't get that same sense of connection, and I think the interdependency that was so much part of many of the background of indigenous peoples.
You have a sense at all? I've heard from time to time that the feeling that that's beginning to be rekindled, that sense of connection to the environment among Native peoples. Do you see that at all? Growth again?
Yeah, I think in some respects that is there. I think the how that happens and for what reason that happens are slightly different, I think. I think, first of all, I think it's really because it, not only is it people understand that land is valuable in the sense of, you know, your own security. I think that's one way to put it. The other, I think, is more like protecting what belonged to your history and to your people. And so the sacredness in that part of it may not play a major role as it did and as it does for still other of these communities. So I think it depends. I mean, there's a lot of effort made in many indigenous communities to really look at land as, you know, potential economic venture and what could be getting from what could be taken from that land, and sometimes at a very, you know, high cost. Navajo Nation, for instance, was part of the part of that early discovery of uranium, and there were poor
right.
practices and many people died, you know, lung cancer and what have you, and some of that contaminated materials were put into building homes. Nobody knew that this was dangerous. So I think now people are a little bit more cautious, but I think there's still, you know, I think it's getting back to relearning those kinds of things that's an important part, too.
I think we all hope that's true. Now, on another tack, we wanted to ask you about your own involvement with the interfaith movement and why that's been important to you. And I think it's important to all of us who are listening here, and we'd be fascinated to know what you would say about that.
Well, I think personally for myself, I like learning about other people's spirituality, what is important to them, and I am very interested in how they see their role in this whole area of mankind and how people treat each other. I think that's important to me. The other is part of my health work and practice. I see spirituality as paramount in the health arena. And the more I know about various other faiths, it's very helpful to me because I can use that to help somebody else who may come in either as a Muslim or, you know, a Buddhist. I think it's helpful to me personally at that level. I think the other thing is it's a two-way street. You get to also have something to say about what your particular spirituality is and create some dialogue and maybe some appreciation and maybe correct some of the misinformation or myths that exist. I usually tell people if the history, if you could go back in history and you came up on an indigenous community, you might want to look at that as really like a society of religious practitioners, because I know in Navajo the comment was we pray so often all day that, you know, we might have been considered you know, some sort of religious order. But that was very common. It was something you did to be thankful for or whatever, and it was just part of life. It was something that was very different. But people thought we didn't have any religion, that, you know, because we didn't have temples and we didn't have altars. Because nature was really our place. You go to the mountaintop to pray, and you walk through the canyon to pray, and acknowledge that this is your cathedral, this is your place. And so we didn't have any of those monuments that other people consider to be a marker for religion.
I think that's so interesting, you saying that your spirituality so suffused your life that there was no part of the life that was separate from it. And so when people came looking for your religion, they found none. Because it was everything.
Because it was your whole life.
Yes.
Because it
yes.
was your whole life, right, yeah. Well, we know that your time is running out soon, and I wonder if you could just tell us what else you'd like to add, and particularly, perhaps, what are some of the real challenges facing the American indigenous communities these days?
And how can anyone on the outside of that community, if they're interested and sincere, how could they help that?
Well, I think first of all it's still kind of important to remember that spirituality is not owned by one people, but that almost every living being has something that is important. And I think that's the first thing, is to acknowledge that despite whatever is part of the history book or are the kinds of stories out there, that Native people had religion. The way they went about to take care of their and reaffirming their spiritualities were also very different. And very much of what Native spirituality is also wrapped up in healing, just like the history of Christianity was. You know, the priests were the healers. And so they were considered very special people, and I think that's true. So I think if there is a way to help, it's really to make it possible for people to have access for their spiritual healers to gather herbs or to have a place and a time to be at the sacred sites. Many of these areas that we're fighting for now are considered a public property that, you know, like Devil's Tower. We have a conflict with recreational users of these areas. And so you can't go up there and meditate. The same thing is true with the medicine wheel in Wyoming. I think we could always use support in that area. The other, I think, is just really to continue the dialogue and to understand that Native people of today that you meet, maybe a Baptist, maybe a Catholic, or, you know, they are also a member of organized religion. And for many of them, they accept this, and a lot of times wholeheartedly. And they have been taught that their Native ways was pagan, negative, and evil. I guess my message is to organized religion is to really go back and take a look at that and say that's not really true, and really build on commonalities. So people are not ashamed to say that their historical roots also had a sense of good spirituality and not something that's been dismissed and ignored.
I think that's very powerful.
Very powerful. In fact, we might have some dialogue in our breakout groups about that after you need to leave the call, because I think that's exactly the topic that is central to people's minds these days, and you're a great spokesperson for interreligious understanding.
Well, I appreciate the time, and I'm really sorry I can't stay on for the full hour, but I have obligations too. I have to chair another committee here, so.
Well, thank you so much for being with us, Jenny. We're going to invite you again, so you'll have another chance.
All right. Well, thank
you. Okay, good luck to you.
Yeah, thank you
again. Thanks again, Jenny.
Bye.
Bye-bye.